Hello, my name is Ron. What's your name? Oh, that's nice. It's very nice to meet you. Yeah. Hi. Good. All right, that's enough.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
Hi. Hi.
Whatever.
So annoying.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Oh, big deal. So what? What's your point?
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
I know my name, thank you. I went to a cocktail mixer last night, a place where they mix cocktails. No, a place where people mix together. I went into Boston, and I went to a media type mixer convention mixer, meet people from the media. It was a get together of media people who tend to get together and just stroke each other's ego. It's a good time, actually. You meet somebody and they tell you what news organization they're with, and your response is, "Oh my goodness, it's a pleasure to meet you." And I introduce myself, like, "Oh my goodness, it's a pleasure to meet you." We both don't know who each other is. We've never heard of each other. It's just, it's all small, superficial, fake news is what it is. So I go to this thing, and the great thing about cocktail mixers is in the title of the activity, there's the word cocktail. And, you know, you can't go wrong. No matter how uncomfortable a situation is, if you have that life vest called cocktails, then it's temporarily acceptable. So I'm walking around with my cocktail, and at this particular place at a hotel, people were wearing these name badges, which I really hate. I hate it so much I can't tell you. I feel like I'm back in first grade with Miss Francis, the teacher, giving us little name tags so that we know each other's name. It's so primer stupid. I felt like I should be pulling somebody's pigtails or waiting for my mother to pick me up to drive me home with my face pressed against the window. "Mom, where are you? I've got to get out of here. Pick me up. Please bring me home. I can't stand it anymore. I've already had a cocktail." Too bad they didn't have cocktails in first grade. Would have made life a lot easier. But they didn't, and it wasn't. So I walk into this place, and out in the hallway before this hotel ballroom, a cocktail mixer media thing, there are a couple of young ladies who are very, very well-dressed, I guess. I don't know. I really don't know the way you're supposed to dress anymore. Everything's business casual. I don't even know what that means. Business casual, dressed for business, but casually. What? You know, what does that mean? So they're sitting there, and I walk up to them, and they greet me with these phony smiles. So phony. They should be hating my guts right off the bat, but they don't know me well. So they say, "Hi, how are you? Welcome to the blah, 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 the media mixer. Can I get your name and the organization that you're with, and we'll in my terrible handwriting, I will, with a black magic marker that smells, I will write your name so it's illegible to all, and the name of your media company underneath, and you wear this, you stick it on your lapel. And that way, when people talk to you, they can immediately know your name. And I said, well, can't they ask me my name? This is an icebreaker. It's an icebreaker, because they can walk up to you and shake your hand and go, hi, Ron. I said, okay, Ron, New England Broadcasting. And they write that, but they can't fit New England Broadcasting on the little hello, my name is badge. So they put N.E. Broad. All right, so now I'm Ron, the N.E. Broad. Any broad you want, my name is Ron. How could anybody figure out what organization I'm with any broad? What are you doing to me? And now you're making me wear this. Are you trying to shame me in public? Is that the idea? Are these things organized to shame people in public? Is that what's going on? Because it's working. So I take this name tag, and in front of them, I put it on my lapel. I take two steps away from them. I tear it off my lapel, and I attach it to the bottom flap of my sports coat, because it's business casual, where nobody can possibly read it. Or if they want to, it's hovering in my crotch area, where nobody really should ever be looking. Now, here's the interesting thing about Hello, My Name Is badges. Men wear them on their lapels. Women wear them on their dress. Because some women don't have these jackets. They have dresses or just something else, not a jacket. So where do they stick it? About half an inch from their left boob. So I'm walking around this cocktail mixer with my cocktail, looking like I'm at some cheap singles bar. And when I have I walk up to this person, they walk up to me, they're looking at my lapel, I immediately have to stare just to the left of her boob. And I feel wrong about that, because you're not supposed to do things like that, as I understand it. If I read the program correctly, it says it is not correct to stare at a woman's left or right boob, by the way. Either boob is really not a good idea. But then I say, ladies, why do you put your name sticker right near your boob? It looks more like you've named your boob than you as a person. My name is Mary, but my boob's name is Tina. Wow. What's the other one named? Ike? Get it? Ha! That's a reference to a group from the 60s and 70s, so a lot of you may not get that joke. But that's okay. You're not going to get many of jokes of what I say anyway. So I meet these, they're nice people, they're in the media, but I'm just looking at boobs all night because I want to know their names. As I've said on the show before, I have one problem among many, but one problem about my memory. My memory's pretty okay, maybe not as good as it was before I started smoking pot. But by the way, kids, if you start smoking marijuana at any age, especially when you're young, it will affect your memory. I'm raising my hand. It will affect your memory. And either because you literally can't remember it anymore, or you're so high that you totally don't care what it was. For me, I totally don't care what it is or was or anything. I'm very bad at names. I'm pretty good at faces, as long as you put your name badge on your forehead. I'm pretty good at faces. I can tell if I've met you before, but I have no freaking idea what your name is at all. At all. I'm not even sure if you have a male or female name. I don't even know anything about the name thing. I confuse them. If your name is Jennifer or Jessica, I'm pretty good with that because every freaking female is named Jessica or Jennifer. Every single one. Every single one. And if your name is not Jennifer or Jessica, something's wrong with you because you're not fitting into the pattern. There are so many J female names, it's unbelievable. Anyway, and some of them get very upset. Oh, I know a girl named Jenny. J-E-N-I. Every once in a while, I guess by mistake, in a familiar sense, I call her Jen. And she turns around every time and gives me a look like murder will be occurring within a short period of time as soon as she gets a weapon. She's very upset that I called her Jen. Now, that ain't far off from Jenny. And Jen is kind of an affectionate, shorter way of saying Jenny, which is a shorter, affectionate way of saying Jennifer. All those names should be synonymous, but they're not. This girl, don't ever call her Jen. Oh, my God, don't do it. You'll have a slander lawsuit in the mail the next day with a summons to appear in court. Names are stupid. Stupid. Adam and Eve. Come on. Who are we kidding? Who are we kidding? There are some people with the name Adam. It's not exactly a manly name. It's kind of a naked in the garden kind of name for a guy, you know. Adam is a little too proper, a little too biblical. Eve, I'm not meeting a lot of Eves. I don't think I've met an Eve in decades. If I did, it would immediately pop into my head that she must be from the Garden of Eden or from New Jersey. One or the other. Synonymous, synonymous. Haven't met an Eve. Never met an Eve. Never, ever, ever met an Eve. Isn't it interesting, though, how if you have a relationship in your past with a girl with a certain name, like, let's say, Marcia. This did not happen to me. But if you had a girl named Marcia and you had a horrible, horrible blowout and the relationship ended very, very badly, very badly, very ugly breakup. You know what those are. Ugly breakups. Some of you don't understand what that is because this was before they had texting. You would actually have to face-to-face or on the telephone say to the person, I'm sorry, but this is not working out and we cannot see each other anymore, as opposed to texting a breakup by saying, it was a good run, see ya. You know, so you have a bad breakup with a girl named Marcia, and then you go on in life 20 years later, 20 long years later after this horrendous breakup, you don't never speak to her again, you never hear from her again. You meet another girl who looks very attractive, is a very, very nice woman, and you say to her, may I ask your name? And she says, Marcia. And all of a sudden, everything comes up from the past. And your response to her, no matter how nice, how lovely she may be, your response is, oh, okay, I got to go.
Well, wait a minute. We haven't even talked. You seem like a nice person. Where are you going? Hey, where are you going?
I'm sorry. That name will not work for me. Either you legally go down to court and change your name, or we cannot continue this conversation.
Wait a minute, where are you going? We were getting along so well.
I'm not superficial. I just have wounds that apparently will never heal. I don't know. I really don't know. Life is interesting. It's long, and then again it's short. When you have a 9-to-5 job and you're 30 years old or 25 years old, you work a 9-to-5, the weekend comes, you have a couple of beers, you go to sleep, and then it's time to go to work again on Monday, then life seems like it goes on forever. I remember sitting in a high school algebra class which is, might as well sentence me to death, or at least, you know, some type of prison sentence. You might as well do that, because sitting in a classroom, a 1.5 hour class, algebra, that's a prison sentence. And all I did was stare at the clock. There was a big clock on the wall to the left of the blackboard. Yes, in those days, we had blackboards and chalk. I know, archaic, it was true. And this teacher would just be droning on and on and on about these numbers that I knew I would never need to know any of this stuff, and indeed never did. Because guess what happened? They invented calculators, which were invented back then. Now, nobody can add or subtract. They take out their smartphone, and the smartphone tells Siri, what's 100 minus 2?
Aye, 98, you idiot.
That's my impression of Siri. I know it doesn't sound like her, but that's the best I can do. And it was necessary to do that impersonation because I thought it would kind of add to the commentary. So I never needed algebra. Kind of never. No. So I'm sitting there and I'm just staring at the clock to the left of the blackboard, the chalkboard. And I'm watching. It had a second hand on it, which made it that much more interesting and convoluted. I just watched every second of my life tick away, and that second hand was going slower and slower and slower, and I never thought that class would ever end, but it did. And then I got older, and my young adult thing was starting to fade away, and I started feeling like life is really short now. Wow, it's two things in one. It's short and it's long. And I've said this before, and I'll write a book about it. I've said it before. If you want life to slow down and last forever, just put yourself in a situation that you're stuck in, and time will never tick away. Anything that bores the hell out of you, do it. And life will slow down like you would not believe. If you want life to go very quickly, then do something that you really enjoy a lot, and you will find that life passed you by. Does that ever happen to you? You're having a great conversation, which doesn't happen to me a lot, or you're playing a game or something, and you go, oh my God, look at the time. Look at the time. Wow, it's so much later than I thought. That's because you're having a good time, and time goes too quick. Stop having a good time. It's making your life short. Do things that bore you. Marry boring people. Be around people you can't stand. That clock will not tick, I guarantee you. Time will stand still. It's like going back in time. The worst thing ever is to be with a boring, horrible person on the day that you turn your clocks back. Oh my God, that's the worst. That's an extra hour of something you didn't want to begin with at all. Wow. Wow. I have a great guest today. And it's kind of interesting. It's a sociological guest. And we're going to talk about when you're raising your kids, how to raise them to be good, kind people. And this is an important conversation because right now, in our atmosphere of society, both political and otherwise, people are getting meaner. A lot meaner. A lot meaner. How do you raise kids that have that old-time kind of attitude? So we're going to talk about that. You know, a lot of people say that I am grumpy, but I'm not. Did that sound grumpy to you? It did?
Yes, of course, you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational, and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hello, Doctor.
Good morning, Ron. How are you?
Great. Dr. Thomas Lacona joins us now. He is the author of a book, How to Raise Kind Kids and Get Respect, Gratitude, and a Happier Family in the Bargain. He's an expert in this field and related fields as well. And thanks for being with us. This is a question that I've asked myself many, many times, especially within the past year. How do you raise kids to be kind when you have an atmosphere that isn't kind? It becomes a challenge. Parents always have to combat psychological society, don't they?
They do, and it's a tougher world for kids to grow up in. It's a tougher world for us to parent children.
You could for sure.
say it's become, in many ways, a toxic culture with many... many very negative influences. So the way to deal with that is to really be countercultural in deliberate ways, to try to create a strong family culture that is strong enough to resist the bad influences of the wider culture. Fortunately, kids are not equally influenced by all examples. They're influenced most by the examples that come from the people that they have relationships with.
Right.
Now, how do you create an intentional family culture? How do you create something... in this deliberate way. And one way to do that is really start out by saying to each other as parents, what sort of a family do we want to be? And then to sit down with kids and to say, let's write a family mission statement. Companies that are successful have a mission statement. Yeah. And families that are successful also have a sense of where they're going and what they believe, their most important values. Here's a family, for example, 4 children, 9, 7, 6 and 4 when they did this. Their name was Davidson, and they sat down and they ended up with a series of we statements. The we voice is very important because this is not just parents' orders to kids. It's what we believe as a family. We commit to being kind, honest, and fair. We don't lie, cheat, or hurt somebody on purpose. We don't whine, complain, or make excuses. When we make a mistake, we make up for it and learn from it. We commit to learning and growing in our faith. This is a Catholic family. Our faith was important to them. And we live with an attitude of gratitude. So this sets out explicitly in writing, and then gets posted in the kitchen or some other prominent spot, what you most highly value as a family, and it gives you a framework. You can review it at the start of a week, refer to it when things go off the rails, as they inevitably will, and it gives you that point of reference and a basis for the character conversation with your kids. So that's an example of intentionality. Now, how do you really hold everybody accountable to that? You need another support system. I strongly recommend a family sit down and call it a family chat, a family meeting. Do that once a week, maybe on a Sunday night before the next week is starting. And you say, okay, what kind of a week was it? Where do we have some problems? What was good? What wasn't so great? And how can we have a better week next week? Let's take getting off to school. That was trouble. Let's take bedtime. There were problems there. Let's take chores. We had some troubles. And then everybody has a voice. You go around the table. Everybody gets to say what they think. You know, make very clear the purpose is not blaming, but cooperative problem solving. So this holds everybody accountable to what the family mission statement is. You come back to it, you revisit what's happened, and then you try to go forward in a positive way. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that it takes a commitment on the adult to let's say, pull this off, because it's frequent that the adult comes home angry. The adult... argues with his or her spouse. The adult doesn't set an example for the child. Certainly society is no longer setting the example, so it's the parent which is the last vestige of setting up a home base.
And what you say is absolutely true. Families struggle with all kinds of pressures. Sometimes it's a single mom or dad trying to carry the whole load.
Right.
We get upset with each other as spouses and say things that don't model kindness and so on, and then we get discouraged and are tempted to throw in the towel. And the biggest, in a sense, the biggest character lesson you can teach kids is persevering, not giving up. not being defeated by your failures, but to say, look, you know, everybody's human. Your second reaction can be different from your first reaction. You lost your temper, blew your stack, but you can calm down, say, I'm sorry about that, let's talk. So these children have a model of somebody who is able to bounce back. There's that resilience, and that's a hugely important part of character. So you don't need to be perfect, and you can admit your mistakes. That's a good example.
You know, you just said the magic word to me was model. A kid needs a model, and if you don't provide one or society doesn't provide a good one, they'll go after the bad model. But every kid needs a superhero, and you got to be that.
And we've got a lot of research that points exactly to the importance of parents. One of the most, and setting that sort of example, one of the best studies that I'd like to share with parents is called the Altruistic Personality. Mm-hmm. It was done by a husband and wife research team, Samuel and Pearl Olliner. And they studied people who had risked their lives to rescue Jews from Hitler's Holocaust. They wondered what kind of families did they come from. Most people did not get involved in rescue. Only a tiny percentage did. And they found that the parents were persons who both modeled and directly taught caring moral values. They emphasized the obligation to help other people generously. One woman said, my mother always said to remember to do some good for someone at least once a day. A man said, my parents taught me to serve others. If somebody was ill or in need, my parents would always help. And so the parent there is both setting the example, but also making it explicit. So we need to practice what we preach, but we also need to preach what we practice to make very clear to our kids the values that guide what we do.
Now, your book will help parents find that road, I assume.
Yeah, it emphasizes the importance of practice because virtues are habits. Habits develop through a lot of practice. We want the tendency to be respectful, to be courteous, to be kind, to be something that's natural for kids to do. It's almost second nature. They don't have to think about whether they should say please or thank you. They'll need lots of reminders, of course, before it becomes a habit. But if you think of yourself as a character coach, just the way if you're coaching a sport, I think parents understand intuitively that that requires a lot of patience, giving kids tons of practice, feedback when they don't swing right to hit the ball, if they whatever the skill is. It's the same deal with developing good character. These things take a lot of practice, a lot of repetition. So, and then if you're proactive, you say, well, look, you know, I want you to think, you know, before we do the ice cream tonight after dinner, how are you going to ask for that? So you help them remember, okay, I want to say please, not I want strawberry, I want the chocolate, but, you know, may I please have the strawberry? And if you can anticipate in that way, it helps with the habit formation.
Yeah. You know, as a parent, I've realized as I've grown older that, yeah, I'd like my kids to be successful. I'd like to have money and all that kind of stuff. But my greatest achievement is probably that I raised good people. I raised a good-hearted human being. That's the achievement, isn't it?
It is, because at the end of the day, if you ask what makes for a fulfilling life.
Yeah,
you know, we don't look at the size of our bank account. We don't look at how much power we've got or whether we're on the front of one of the magazines. We look at whether we've made a positive difference in somebody's life.
Yeah.
Do we have people's respect? Do we have a reputation for honesty?
Right.
It's leading a life of character that brings the reward of fulfillment at the end of life. It's not the other thing. So our job as parents is to contribute that. And yet to understand that at the end of the day, as Anne Frank wisely said at age 14 before the Gestapo came to the door, parents can set children on the right path, they can be a good example, but in the end, the final forming of our character lies in our own hands. And that's an important message to give to our kids as well. They create their character by the choices they make.
Yeah.
And in the end, we're responsible for the kind of person we become.
Well, he's Dr. Thomas Lacona, and it's How to Raise Kind Kids and Get Respect, Gratitude, and a Happier Family in the Bargain. It's been released. It's on sale right now, and maybe it'll become your Bible. Who knows? I could talk to you forever, but I'm not allowed to. So thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Thank you, Ron.
Take
My pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, if you've had half as much fun as I've had today, then you've had half as much fun as I've had today. I'll be with you again tomorrow. Please join me then. And until then, I wish you peace.